This is A Couple Cooks Small Bites, bite-sized food for thought. I'm Sonia Overheiser.
And I'm Alex Overheiser. We're the podcast that pairs small bites of food with short-form interviews to inspire you in less than 20 minutes.
You can go to our website, acouplecooks.com, for hundreds of recipes, healthy living inspiration, and our cookbook, Pretty Simple Cooking. Today on the show, can what we eat affect climate change? Hey, welcome to Small Bites. We know you're busy, so on this show, we cut out the small talk and get right to the point to inspire you with the stories, ideas, and people behind what we eat.
And on today's small bite, we're going to try to take a big bite of a big idea, which is climate change. It's pretty overwhelming, and the way it affects food can be pretty confusing. You're talking about industrial farming, you're talking about transportation, you're talking about the type of food you eat, but we brought on a guest who's going to help break it all down for us.
That's right. Her name is Eliza Barkley, and she is the science and health editor at Vox.com, V-O-X.com. So we're so excited to talk to her. Let's jump right into this small bite because she has a lot to unpack for us.
All right. So the small bite that we're pairing with today's conversation is some sort of tomato dip.
That's right. It is our irresistible tomato almond dip. It's from our book, Pretty Simple Cooking, and I chose it for today's show because people just cannot get enough of it, hence the irresistible. We have friends and family we serve this to, and some of them even guard the bowl and go hide in a corner and just eat it.
Well, enough talking. Let's eat.
Okay. I have a few homemade pita chips to go with this dip, so there'll be a little bit of crunching. Here you go, Alex. We've made this so many times, but is it still irresistible to you on the 100th time?
I'm barely finishing the first bite before I'm trying to go back for a second because it's complicated. There's a complexity there. It's kind of tangy. It's kind of rich. There's some garlic, a little bit of spice. I love it.
Yeah, there's olive oil, fire roasted tomatoes. There's a lot going on in this dip. And what we love about it is that it's fully plant-based, but also very irresistible to anyone who eats it. So you don't feel like you're giving anything up. You don't know that it's healthy when you're eating it. You just think it tastes so good.
And it's a great intro recipe if you are trying to eat more plants, which is what our guest is coming on today to talk to us about.
Yes, we wanted to bring in an expert on this topic, and Eliza Barkley fits that mold. She is the science and health editor at Vox.com. Formerly, she was co-editor of NPR's food blog, The Salt, and covered food, health, and science for NPR on the web and on the air. Welcome to the show, Eliza.
Thank you so much for having me.
So a few weeks ago, I was listening to the radio, and I heard a story about the new UN climate change report. And the way the story was reported made me immediately take notice that this was something really important. There's been a lot of news on climate change over the past years. What makes this UN climate change report so important?
Well, the report was released by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is a group of all of the world's top climate scientists. And they don't put out reports very often. And when they do, we pay attention because they usually are a really important summary of the science to date. And so a few years ago in 2015, all of the countries in the world came together to hash out the Paris Climate Accord, where almost every country in the world agreed to reduce emissions by 2030. And so this report, the one that just came out a couple weeks ago, was a follow-up to that meeting in 2015. And it was looking at this question of what would it take for us to meet this target of limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, and that's an average, which is what we would really want to do to limit the worst effects of global warming. The big takeaway is we need to radically, radically speed up our emissions reductions. We need to reduce by 45% worldwide by 2030 in order to hit that 1.5 degree target. And if you can imagine what that means, that's a huge, huge transition of the entire global economy. And most scientists say, like, we probably won't hit it. But the IPCC's job is to say, We really should hit it because even 1.5 degrees of warming is going to bring about huge, huge changes in weather systems, in the environment. It's going to mean, you know, coral reefs, more and more coral reefs dying, more and more extreme weather, more droughts, all kinds of problems for humanity.
So the good news in this report is that there's actually some things we can do to reverse or at least slow down some of these impacts. And a lot of these tactics are kind of large scale, like subsidies or governmental programs. But we were surprised to see that eating less meat was on this list. Can you tell us about how eating less meat can kind of have a good impact on climate change?
Sure. So just to be clear, the IPCC doesn't actually recommend any strategies for how to reduce. Their job is to summarize the science.
So they just bring us the bad news and then they let us figure out how to fix it.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I mean, in the press conference, they very tentatively said, yes, we should probably put a price on carbon. But my colleague and I, Umair Irfan, you know, when we were covering the report, and then I was thinking about how over in the last couple of years, you know, we at Vox have done tons of stories about all the different types of approaches to reducing emissions that we know about. I mean, the positive takeaway is that we can do this. These are huge goals, but we can totally do it. We actually know how, and human beings are extremely smart. We have had to deal with all kinds of massive tragedies in the past, you know, World War II, we rebuilt from that. So I think that's sort of how we have to think about our situation now, is we've got to mobilize. So yes, changing our diets is a huge piece of this. It, you know, think about like all the changes we're talking about to the global economy and to our culture too. I mean, they're all big. Like putting a price on carbon, that's a huge thing. We've never done that before at a global scale. But yes, and changing our diet in a massive way, that's never really been done, you know, in a sort of voluntary, intentional way. But yes, the reason why is that, animal products in particular create the majority of food-related greenhouse gas emissions. The food sector as a whole, then the food supply chain, it creates 26% of total emissions. So we think about, you know, there's coal-fired plants, there's cars, there's dirty diesel buses, there's all different sources of emissions, but the food chain produces a quarter. So that's a huge amount. And then within that quarter, we're saying that scientists, plenty of people have researched this. They have found that ruminant meat, so those are, cows for the most part. A ruminant is any animal that, you know, eats grass. That type of livestock contributes the most emissions, and it's mostly from the methane that they burp out. But also, you know, producing beef uses 20 times the land and emits 20 times the emissions of producing beans, you know, per gram of protein. So they're really resource intensive beef cattle, but also dairy cattle too. So I think that when we think about this, it's obviously not about asking the entire planet to go vegan. Like that is clearly very unrealistic for lots of reasons. And, you know, there's some situations where beef cattle or dairy cattle are actually, they work really well with the grassland environment. So probably it makes sense to have some cows in some places where the landscape or the ecosystem is really well suited to their grazing. But, you know, at this, you know, Americans, we eat, I don't have the number on my fingertips, but it's well over 100 pounds of beef per person a year, which is just way too much. So we're talking about, you know, when we talk about this dietary shift, we're talking about broad scale reductions we eat almost the most meat per capita of any country in the world. So I think it's really on us to start to bring our meat consumption down. And then there's a lot of other countries where meat consumption is rising really rapidly right now, China, for instance. And some of that is cultural. Meat is associated with affluence. And so I think that we need a sort of new more responsible culture worldwide around meat, where meat is not so associated with affluence, and we can all eat meat in a much more, you know, globally responsible way, if that makes sense.
I love that you said that we can do this, that it's not too late. And that's why I loved your article when we came across it. We were like, yes, like, this is a really kind of depressing topic, but it looks like we could actually do something about it, which is really empowering. And then the piece about just changing our diets, not to be vegetarian or vegan fully, but just to start to reduce our meat consumption can really make a difference in the world. And I'm kind of wondering, is this going to be something that top level leaders will have to try to kind of set forth really broad edicts on, like, let's eat this way, or can everyday people do it? How will we change people's minds that eating plants can be really delicious and satisfying, and that we don't have to consume as much meat as we do as a culture today?
Yeah, I think you're getting at a really interesting aspect of this, which is, up until now, I think, you know, clearly this is this call to eat less meat. This is not, it's not new, at least in environmental circles. This has been a thing for a long, long time. And there was a book from the 70s, Diet for a Small Planet, which was not so explicitly about climate change. That was by Francis Moore-Lapay, but it did, you know, point out long, long ago that, you know, animals are very resource intensive, and we should eat for a, you know, eat in a way that has a low impact on the earth. But, you know, we have not at all reduced our meat consumption. We've not come close. I mean, yes, you know, there's more and more vegans, there are more and more plant-based food options out there. But I think we cannot count on individuals, I think, to just make this dietary shift happen. We do need policies. So yes, we do need our leaders to think about what types of policies we should have to encourage plant-based eating. And I've talked to a lot of different people in the food industry about this. And, you know, what's interesting is that they're really, really wary of explicitly saying cut meat consumption or cut the amount of meat we're serving. That what they are more willing to do is say, let's promote plant-based eating. That's more positive, right? I think they are afraid of turning people off if they say, you know, we commit to cutting our meat consumption, which is, though I think they should do that. I do think, you know, maybe eventually we'll get to a point where, just like companies now are bragging about, you know, Fortune 500 companies now brag about reducing their emissions. You know, Google and Amazon, for instance, have very, very aggressive targets around buying more renewable energy, reducing their overall emissions. But we don't see big food companies yet committing to meat reductions in meat purchasing. But I think that's where we need to get. And actually, there is a new program with the World Resources Institute called the Cool Food Pledge, where they are helping companies, restaurants, universities, hospitals slash their food-related emissions 25% by 2030. So that's like a voluntary program, and that's also, if you heard, I was just reading their description, and that is not explicitly about meat, right? But actually, it will involve reducing meat that they're serving. One other thing I'll just note, yeah, is that I think that this is about, so really key to this, yes. Individuals, yes, we all need to consider this carefully, limit our own meat consumption. But I also think there's a lot of potential for big institutions, which buy lots of meat, serve lots of meat, have the power to influence the market, for them to make commitments to actually serve less meat, to serve more plants, to literally substitute plants for meat. And so I really think we're just at the beginning of that. But I think that if you yourself want to help this dietary shift along, don't just buy a veggie burger or make a veggie burger from scratch. Consider asking, you know, at your school or your workplace or some restaurant that you love, ask for more plants and help and show, you know, that there's demand for plants and you know, less demand for meat. I think that's really crucial.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It's almost like creating a new space race where the entire country gets excited about this idea that we can do something different and that it can be a positive change.
Yeah, but it's going to be really hard. I mean, as anyone who grew up in a home or a community that where meat is so centric to the culture, right? Like I had a conversation about this once with a friend of mine from Nebraska, and she's like, you have no idea how difficult it would be to tell people and to tell my family, my friends in Nebraska, to stop eating their steak, their hamburgers, like, you know, and this goes, we are a huge livestock raising country. It's part of our economy. It's part of our culture in a lot of states in the West, in the South. And so this is going to be hard. And I don't really have a solution for that cultural question of how do we make meat, like the American identity, less tied to meat. But so that's a huge challenge.
Yeah. I think one thing that can help is that, that, like you said, it's not about everyone never eating meat again. It's just a kind of a little bit of a shift. And so we're hopeful that, that with people kind of jumping on board, knowing that it could have this big of an effect on our planet, that there can start to be these little shifts that will maybe hope to waterfall.
Yeah. Right. It's just, we don't need huge, massive T-bone steaks. We can have small portions and people can still enjoy. And same goes for pork, for chicken, et cetera.
There's so many interesting ways to think about this topic and ways to not only change our own personal habits, but to figure out how to get our communities to change. Thank you for coming on the show and explaining all of this to us.
My great pleasure. And it's great to talk about this with you. And I'm so glad you're interested in the topic.
Okay, I think climate change is still a big subject, but I like that we have a few action points here, some things that actually have evidence that what we do can make a difference in the world.
That's right. Again, it has to be on a very massive scale, but I liked that Eliza gave us a few takeaway points of maybe talking to our school district to see if we can have more plants, maybe a meatless Monday, going to restaurants and asking for more plant-based options. There are things that we can do to create some demand and some awareness around this issue to make it seem a little less weighty and huge.
And I love that idea of moving away from meats and cheeses as being the only way to have affluence or fanciness in a meal. The idea that maybe a plant-based meal or an irresistible dip could be something that anybody would want.
So as Eliza mentioned, there are so many different things that go into climate change, from politics and clean energy subsidies, but food is also part of the equation. So we want to hear from you. What do you think about this topic? Have you started making any of these changes in your diet? Have you thought about eating more plants? Let us know. You can reach out to us on Instagram at acouplecooks, or our email is email@acouplecooks.com.
Thanks for listening to A Couple Cooks Small Bites. You can find this episode and hundreds of recipes over at our website, acouplecooks.com.